Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Hongsa, Text Number 42. Sahi Sarva Svaradhyaksho
Sahi Sarva Svaradhyaksho
Yasara Dvit Guha Shayaha
Yasara Dvit Guha Shayaha
Kanmula Devata Sarva
Kanmula Devata Sarva
Sheshvara Sa Chatur Mukha
Sheshvara Sa Chatur Mukha
Ayam Vaitat Vado Payo
Ayam Vaitat Vado Payo
Yad Rishnam Vihimsanam
Sa
He, Lord Vishnu, He, indeed, Sarvasura Adyaksha, the leader of all the demigods, He, indeed, Asura Dvit, the enemy of the Asuras, Guhashayaha, He is the super soul within the core of everyone's heart. Katmula, taking shelter of his lotus feet. Devata, the demigods exist. Sarva, all of them. Saishwaraha, including Lord Shiva. Sachatura Mukha, as well as Lord Brahma, who has four faces.
I am.
This is. Vai. Indeed. Tatvada Upayaha. The only means of killing him, Vishnu. Yat, which Rishinam, of the great sages, saintly persons, or Vaishnavas. Vihingshanam, suppression of all kinds of persecution. Suppression with all kinds of persecution. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, hastened by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. No, it's Prabhupada. Yeah, Prabhupada. We were reading the 10th canto in Radha edition. Prabhupada's disciples. Srila Prabhupada's purport, translation. Lord Vishnu, the super soul in the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras and is therefore known as Asura Dvit. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. So, if you want to follow the Asuras and you want to kill Vishnu, now you know how to do it. Purport. The death, what's that? The demigods and the Vaishnavas, especially, are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, because they are always obedient to his orders. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Vashanti Suraya. The demoniac follows the Kansa thought that if the Vaishnavas, saintly persons, and sages were persecuted, the original body Vishnu would naturally be destroyed. Thus they desired to suppress Vaishnavism. The Asuras perpetually struggled to persecute the Vaishnavas because they did not want Vaishnavism to spread. Vaishnavas preach only devotional service, not encouraging karmis, jnanis, and yogis. Because if one must liberate himself from material conditional life, one must ultimately become a Vaishnava. Hare Krishna consciousness movement is directed with this understanding, and therefore the asuras always try to suppress it. Translation. Lord Vishnu, the super soul in the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the asuras, is therefore known as Asura Dvait. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. Please note that. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has said, Astanaham Vishita Kuran, Samsareshu Naranama, Shi Pramya Jasram Ashubam, Asrishteva Yonishu. That those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among man, I perpetually cast into the lower species of life. So the word uses asura, so Krishna doesn't seem to like the asuras very much. But actually, the asuras do much better in the lower species of life because they don't have to worry about Vishnu. Their minds are a little peaceful. You're escaping. Where are you going?
To some city called just my ID.
Your ID?
Yeah, some temporary ID is open.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Welcome to Slovenia.
Hopefully, that's it.
So the asuras, Krishna actually does them a favor, because if you're always in anxiety that someone's going to come and kill you, or that you have some enemy, then it's not very pleasant. But if you enter into the lower species of life, you don't have to worry about Vishnu. You just have to worry about all the other living entities who are trying to kill you. Anyhow, the two qualifications of asuras, if you want to become an asura, you have to become envious, and you have to become mischievous. And then you become qualified to be the lowest of men, Naradama. So in society, modern society, practically everyone has the qualifications of being the lowest among men. In the sense that no one practically in modern society is even following the basic principles of religion. Even those who claim to be following religious principles, they only follow some of the religious principles. Namely, most of them, they object to abortion, for example. In the Christian religion, most of it rejects abortion. But they're very enthusiastic about killing animals. And usually they're into intoxication also. Practically speaking, very few religions nowadays follow ahimsa. Even the Buddhists don't even follow that. When I was in Thailand, I went to a number of temples, and they're all Ram temples in Thailand. So many of them are Ramachandra temples. They just have their own idea of who Lord Ramachandra was. But Lord Ramachandra is depicted throughout the temple in his paintings. It's not exactly the Lord Ramachandra we think, because they don't really believe he's God, but a great personality. And interesting demons are depicted in the temple also. But in Thailand, practically all the young men become Buddhists at some time of their life. Even the king spent some time being a Buddhist monk. So Buddhist monks, they survive by going door to door and begging. But most of them are not vegetarians. In fact, out of the thousands and thousands of Buddhists in Thailand, only 100 were vegetarians. Their philosophy is that whatever people give us to eat, we have to accept, and therefore if they give us you know, sub, do we eat it? If they give us a rat, we eat it also. Whatever they give us. Or as they say in English, beggars can't be choosy. Which would be all right, except the fact that they objected to the 100 Buddhists who were vegetarians, and they had them all arrested and put in jail for not being real Buddhists, for being vegetarians. Luckily, the king pardoned them, so there's still that 100 Buddhists who are in Thailand, they're free now, who are vegetarians. Indeed, in Belgium, when they had this cult phenomena, I'm sure it hasn't gone away, it just subsided. And the big thing was the cults are going to get you. Then it was terrorists, now it's COVID, whatever. Someone is going to get his kid. Take shelter of the government. They'll protect you. The government and mommy will protect you. So we were declared in Belgium and in France also one of the top 10 dangerous cults. They had a good number of cults in France and in Belgium. And the reason why we got that honor of being one of the 10 top dangerous cults in Belgium is for two reasons. One of them is that we chant the names of God on the street. Therefore, we contaminate the minds of the young, innocent. They might become devotees and ruin their material life. The other is that we're vegetarians. That was a great sin in Belgium because they raised a lot of animals to slaughter, and if vegetarians spread, Belgium would go bankrupt. So we were dangerous. In any case, generally the Suras, they love killing animals. And they're generally the other, if you kill animals and eat them, then usually you have to take some kind of intoxication in order to digest the food. And then, of course, you can't see everyone as equally. You may look at someone and get hungry, and someone else you doesn't look very appetizing. That way it's hard to see everyone with an equal vision. So therefore everything is speculation. It tastes good, it doesn't taste good. Or, what was his name, the Buddhist shooter from Germany? Manidhar, he said. When he was distributing books in Germany, he'd hand the books to people, and they'd look at it and try to figure out what is the flavor of the book cover. And if it was their favorite flavor, they'd buy the books, because it reminded them of their favorite flavor. A lot of the books got sold, which were brown, because it reminded people of chocolate. It's called Anamaya. So, people are very much in favor of gratifying their senses, and there are certain things that gratify some people's senses and it doesn't gratify other people. But still, anyone who has some slight inclination to follow previous saints, at least they follow some kind of principle. Like in America, most of the religions are against abortion, but they're completely into killing animals, and some of them are in favor of intoxication, gambling. And others are completely against killing animals, but they're completely into illicit sex. So, anyone who is in that consciousness, it's not possible to actually understand spiritual life. Because as long as one is covered by illusory energy, it's not possible to understand what is reality. Now Krishna says, asram yeva asram yonya janmisu muda janmani janmani mama prapyaiva kundiya tatho yatyatma vidhiya. Therefore, gradually asuram yonim apanam. I put these asuras into the divine egg species, and this gradually sink down and down and down and down into the lowest species of life. So what is this? Why is Krishna so cruel? Why doesn't he just tell the asuras to grow up? Because they're attached. What are they attached to? What won't they give up? Why are they so much? Why couldn't they care less what Krishna does to them? Because they like Tanaham, was it? Trivida Narakasidam, Dvaram Nashitam Atmanaha, Kama Krodha Tatalovas, Tasmat Etam Trayam Chajet. There are three gates leading to this hell. In other words, it's not by accident that the asuras go down and down and down. It's because they're attached to three things. Actually, they're attached to many things. But the principal three things are lust, anger, and greed. In other words, they love these things. They're attached to it. They can't live without it. As Prabhupada was speaking to about Professor, the Lord Jadkis in England, that the Marquis of Jetland was formerly the governor of Bengal, and he even visited Prabhupada's school, Scottish Church's college. Later on he went back, he was an old man, he went back to England, but he had gotten some appreciation for the Indian culture, Hinduism, and Vaishnavism. So one day when Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers had gone to England, this is in the 30s, actually maybe the 20s even, and they met the Marquis of Jetland. And the Marquis of Jetland said, ask them, can you make me a Brahmin? And the Prabhupada's godbrother said, no problem to make you a Brahmin. You just have to follow four of the principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. And the Marquis of Jetland, a gentleman, aristocratic person, said, impossible. It's not possible to follow those principles. This is life. Or as Prabhupada was speaking to one social worker in Australia, and Prabhupada told him the four of the principles. And the man said, well, I can't follow these principles. I like sex life. Myself, my wife, we love it. How can we give it up? In other words, even the most educated people in society, they can't even understand any reason to give up sense gratification. Because basically speaking, they have no higher taste. Why do they have no higher taste? Because it's really, we have to choose between one or the other. Yaksha Sridhidim Ustrija, Vartate Kamakarata, the Sasadim of Apnoti, Nasukam Naparam Gitim. That those who give up Shastra and act whimsically attain neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So basically speaking, that's everyone's choice. Now within modern society, there was and still is to some extent some pervasiveness of God consciousness through the teachings of personalities such as Lord Jesus Christ, Allah Muhammad, or other types of persons who are influenced by them, by saintly people, or representatives of Krishna. But at the same time, we find Amazon.com is a big book distributor. We may go out, we may do a marathon. Last year we did 13,000 books, and they probably sell that many in Slovenia every 5 minutes. Oh, not that much. But anyhow, every day I'm sure they sell 13,000 books in Slovenia. So we're in competition. We're giving the information coming from Krishna, and they're distributing Freud and Charles Darwin and other personalities, their message. And alongside Charles Darwin and Freud and Stalin and Karl Marx, they're really basically telling people lust, anger, and greed is where it's at. And we're telling people that you're supposed to control your senses and utilize by utilizing them in Krishna's service. Now people have a little taste of piety. That's why they're not so grossly engaged in grossing, satisfying the senses. Like if we tell people that in Korea, as Prabhupada was saying in one lecture, they eat dogs. And we think, oh, how abominable. Little Fuffy, Fifi, I'm not going to eat her. She's so cute. So we think that's abominable. As a matter of fact, some of the things that are current nowadays, 50 years ago, would have been considered abominable. But now they're considered not only normal, but in certain parts of the world, they're considered mandatory. You have to appreciate them. So that's the nature of the material modes of nature. When one gets involved, one goes lower and lower and lower, until one finds himself in the animal species, and then gradually, by experience, one goes higher again. It's considered like a Ferris wheel. Sometimes you go up, and sometimes you go down. But when we're going up, we have to understand why we're going up. Generally speaking, the conditioned soul thinks he's going up because he's a nice person. And actually, I'm supposed to be elevated because I'm a nice person. Everyone should love me because I'm lovable. But actually, we go up because of Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy manifests itself in different ways. Just like here, we find out that the demigods and the Vaishnavas, they're always being persecuted by the Asuras. So one thing is, if we're not being persecuted by the Asuras, it's probably because we're not doing very well as Vaishnavas. We're a little slack. In other words, when we start blending in with the Asuras and become acceptable to them, it's a bad sign. Now that doesn't mean we should go out and agitate people so they can persecute us, so we can feel good like we're doing a service as Vaishnavas. No, but if we're actually effectively spreading Krishna consciousness, those who are actually Asuras will get disturbed. Prabhupada said, for instance, who can we say are the Asuras? For instance, if we actually, here in Slovenia, if we were effectively distributing Krishna consciousness to a large number of people, then things that the society economically is based upon would be threatened. If everyone became a Krishna Aryan, and we had 15, 20 Govindas all around Ljubljana, and people were waiting in line to get in, then the people who own the slaughterhouses would not be very pleased with us. They probably wouldn't ask us to open the Govindas next to their slaughterhouse, so the workers could have a vegetarian meal every day. They'd be quite upset with us. Similarly, those who are distributing intoxication, especially in the form of alcohol or cigarettes or whatever else they may be distributing, they're not very pleased with our condemning taking intoxication. Therefore, if we're not actually doing very much to stop these things, it means we're not very effectively spreading Krishna consciousness. Because we can get people to chant Hare Krishna and even come to our feast. If you give any hungry person anything, they'll eat it, including prasadam. So we can attract people, but to actually change people's lives, that's a whole other thing. Therefore, Krishna sends, even to the demigods, constantly the Asuras are attacking them. Of course, constantly doesn't mean every day you wake up. There's another Asura in the attacking heavenly kingdoms. Bhagavatam only gives us examples. just to show us that even when we go to the heavenly planets, it might not be as peaceful as we'd like it to be, although it is peaceful. Therefore, the Bhagavatam kind of packs into all the problems of the demigods and the heavenly planets. But if you go there, don't worry. There'll be thousands of years of happiness, and then you'll get attacked by the demons. You know, there'll be an anxiety. And then call for Krishna. Help, help, we can't. We need your help. So that's why the demons come. To inspire the demigods also, before they get too proud and puffed up, too complacent, the demons come to wake them up again. So the same thing for us. Just like I was in Zagreb, and the place I usually stayed in, I had to get some of my things because it was not possible to stay there anymore. Because it looked like a cyclone came through. And it did, as a matter of fact. And then the roof was not there anymore, so it was very romantic because you could see the stars at night. And you didn't have to worry about taking an extra shower because the showers are still coming. You just have to sit in your bed and you get your 55 showers for the day. Now the devotees, they put on a roof, but they couldn't put on a regular roof. They put on a tarpaulin roof. But it just so happens Krishna had his temple in Zagreb, which is situated right on a hill. And all the other houses, they're all below, because of course we're at the top. Unfortunately for the wind, it's not a good idea for a temple to be on the top of the hill when the wind comes at 140 kilometers an hour. So, when I was in the neighborhood there, most of the houses weren't really affected very much. But our building was, this is the second time in 2 years that the roof has been taken off. But this time it's really taken off. So the devotees worked at night, day and night, put the roof back on. And then another storm came and took it off. And then the rain was back, and unfortunately, it's not a good idea. Of course, one devotee was very enthusiastic. He was hoping the insurance would pay and renovate our temple because it's gradually being destroyed. But I told him it's not such a good... It may not be true, but maybe it's true. Because there's so many buildings that got destroyed. Sometimes the insurance companies purposely go broke, so they had to pay for the insurance. In any case, so they put on another roof, worked day and night, and another storm came and took the roof off. I mean, that's serious. Three times. Baseball in America, three times in your health. In any case, they finally put on a roof that's stable now. For now. So, you know, the devotees were getting a little discouraged. We're doing this and we're doing that. Why is this happening? I mean, we're devotees. So the new thing is that Croatia and other places, there are many devotees who don't do very much in terms of service. But when these things come, when the temple's in difficulty, they rally around the temple and they start doing service. So Krishna, he does that. He sees all they're doing such nice service, let them do some more service. If I don't send another wind, Indra doesn't send another wind, they're not going to be engaged for a long time. So let me get as much service as possible from them. So Krishna tells Indra, send another wind so you can engage my devotees in service. And then the temple roof gets taken off. Everyone has to come back and rally. So three times, and then Krishna knows if we do it again, they'll just give up. So Indra says, come, you know, wait another couple of years. I'll send you again when you need it. So even in the spiritual world, Krishna does that. When Krishna comes back from herding the cows, the mother Yashoda greets him, and she wants him to take a shower, a bath. Because he's all dusty, because it's Vrindavan dust. But he's all dusty. So he has to have his dust bathe the way. So she assigns the gopis to do it. So the gopis bathe Krishna in the mood of, and then they put tilak on his forehead. Very lovingly, whatever the gopis do, it's all very loving. So Krishna enjoys having his tilak being put on his forehead by the gopis. So then he erases it, says, oh, you did it wrong. It's all smudge. So he takes it off. So the gopis have to do it again, because Krishna gets even more pleasure every time they do it. So this, Krishna does it a few times, and sometimes he even screams a little bit while the gopis are putting it on. And Mother Jasoda races in, what are you doing to my boy? What are you doing? So all the gopis are shocked. And Krishna's sitting there laughing. He enjoys these things. Krishna has a sense of humor. So we should understand that for the devotees, Krishna sends problems so that they can increase their service. And for the asuras, Krishna is not sending their problems, they're creating their problems. And by creating their problems, then they're getting an invitation to get more and more difficulty. So finally they realize, wait a second, this is getting too bad. Maybe I should start finding out. Maybe there's some alternative. Maybe all the propaganda for so-called satisfy my senses doesn't live up to its promises. And then they become inquisitive. And then Krishna says, Tadasvai Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyastito Kyatva Shastram Vidano Da Karma Karta Miharasi. Once you know what is to be done and what is not to be done by the scriptures, and knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that gradually he can become elevated. So, after a lot of trouble, or after favorably engaging in devotional service, one will come to the Bhagavatam class and hear about Krishna, and hear about devotional service, and giving up lust, anger, and greed is the problem. Even the neophyte devotee who comes to Krishna out of distress, where does this distress come from? It's not that just that his mother was beating him when he was a little baby or something. That's not what the distress comes from, lust, anger, and greed. And then one starts a little regulation of the senses or giving up some gross kind of sense gratification, then the problems go away. As Krishna says, lust is never satisfied and it burns like fire. For everyone, lust, anger, greed, illusion, etc. They're equal opportunity employers. They act equally on everyone. So we always have a choice, either Krishna or Maya. And right now, the only ones who are advertising for Krishna, the one on Krishna's side, are the devotees. And there's, of course, there's some religiousness still in the society. We keep it on the level of almost human society. So that's also appreciated. The message of Jesus Christ, the message of Lord Muhammad, the message of Buddha, these are all also helpful to keep people on a platform where they might become receptive to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, society would have been completely lost. Who was it for these saintly persons? Who also teach the same message, that this is not our kingdom, the real kingdom is in the spiritual world, and we have to give up unrestricted sense gratification to achieve it. Regulate the senses. We have to gratify the senses, but not unrestrictedly. There's other things we have to do also, to engage in Krishna service. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. I just would like to ask how to explain people who don't understand that we should not associate with avartas, when we talk outside, with people who don't know Hare Krishna consciousness very well. How to explain them why? Why is this so important?
Well, it won't be possible to explain it.
Because they start to be afraid, like, whoa, this is too much.
Yes, it is too much.
We should not associate with another people. How?
Yes, of course. Yeah. We don't preach like that.
Yeah.
Only to the devotees we preach like that. Mm. It's like going to a bar where everyone's drunk and telling them about the evils of liquor. It won't be appreciated very much. So we don't do that. We give them something positive first. Anukulyasya sankalpe pratikulyasya vivarjana. First thing is to give something positive. Give them prasadam, give them the holy name, give them the book, something positive, and appreciate who they are, what they're doing. It's like Sridhar Maharaj, I told the story of Sridhar Maharaj, who used to come to Slovenia here. He was at Woodstock, where and they were doing kirtan. There's a tent in Woodstock for kirtan. But at that time they were giving lectures too, so he was giving a lecture about the evils of the four of the principles to a crowd of intoxicated hippies. So obviously they became a little agitated. One of them threw a can of beer at him. So he picked up the can of beer, which didn't hit him. And he looked at it and said, "But this is not my brand." So we have to preach appropriately. We want to give people a positive. It's when they become a little inquisitive, why am I suffering? Then we might, when they're receptive to that, when they get a higher taste, they have some faith in who we are and what we're doing, then we need to do something else to them.
I just talk about the person with whom I read teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So this was the point where something changed, like, oops, what does it mean now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a little bit like, because they don't understand why someone should say something like this, then we don't associate it.
Yeah, Krishna in their heart will have to, we have to bring them to the platform where they will understand. And that brings in the platform, Krishna will give us the intelligence. Because ultimately Krishna is the one who has to help them understand.
Yes.
He's the super zone in their heart. And unless they have enough experience, either positively in Krishna's service, or negatively suffering the material world, they can't really understand. Because their only happiness is association with others, who are just like they are. Or the other thing, probably give the example of one priest came to a mining town in England. You know that story? And he told the one miner, he said, if you keep on drinking alcohol, you're going to go to hell. So he said, but my mother drinks alcohol. So the priest said, she's going to go to hell too. But my father also drinks alcohol. But he's also going to go to hell. But all my brothers and sisters, they drink alcohol. Well, they're all going to hell. But my friends also drink alcohol. Well, they're all going to hell. So the man said, well, my father and mother and sister and brothers and friends are all in hell, and hell is heaven. But then that's happiness, their association with them. So if they all go to hell, the person wants to go to hell with them and enjoy. So the thing that people don't give up very easily is their association. That's why it's a big thing. I remember when I went to college and I got introduced to Krishna consciousness, and there was two devotees in one of my college classes. There was Burjan Prabhu and Dhruvikra Maharaj, and they both had shaven heads. And I thought, this is really strange. Everyone thought it was strange in our class. Then I became a devotee and I shaved up. And everyone thought, wow, this is really weird. There must be some disease going around, people's hair is falling out. So even to shave your head, is at that time everyone had long hair. It was, you know, it was a sign that you're out of the herd. The herd mentality, you know. The herd, if the buffaloes are there, they stick together so the lions don't get them. When animal goes outside the herd, then he's subjected to being attacked by the predators, so you got to stay in the herd. And so if you see someone going out, don't go out of the herd, you got to get attacked. So that's the feeling, I need shelter, so these people are there.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Krandaraya Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.